We're doing Parashat Vayechi. We'll do a quick overview of the parasha and then review it with more depth. We'll dedicate our learning tonight to Reuven Dov Ber Ben Avram Avinu. Reuven Dov Ber HaEzrachi was a dear student of ours. He was commonly known as Dov, and he passed away in a diving accident in Sinai by the Blue Hole a number of years ago tonight. So we'll dedicate our learning to him. Mes Neshama Heaven Aliyah. Dov was well known for his kindness, for his warmth, for his warm smile. Dov left his family and his profession as a priest to convert to Judaism and learn and help the Jewish people move forward. Dov was about to get engaged when he passed away. So our parasha, Parashat Vayechi, speaks about Yaakov's passing, but you'll notice the parasha begins with Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov lived. We speak about Yaakov's 17 final years in Egypt. He lives to the ripe old age of 147. And when he sees he's nearing his death, he summons Yosef and makes him promise that he'll bury him in Eretz Yisrael. He'll take him back to the land of Israel for burial. And then Yosef gets word that his father's ill. He brings his two children, and Yaakov blesses the two children. We know that Yaakov crosses his hands as he places his hands on the two children over their head. He crosses their hands, so his right hand will be on the younger child, on Ephraim's head, and his left hand will be on the older child, on Menashe. And he blesses them with the famous blessing, Hamalach HaGoeloti, the angel that always saved me from any harm should bless the children. And Yosef tries to shift his father's hands, and his father says, I know what's going on, but the younger one will be greater than the older one. And he blesses them, that all of the Jewish people will bless their children. Yisimcha Elokim ki Ephraim v'chim Menashe. People will bless their children. You should be like Ephraim and Menashe. And when Yaakov passes away, he tells Yosef, I'm giving you an extra portion, the city of Shechem, that I took from the Emori. Yaakov summons his children, and he wants to reveal to them what will happen at the end of time. He first calls Reuven, and he tells him, you should have had so much blessing. You should have been the king. Your family should have had the priesthood. Your family should have had the double portion. You lost it all because you rushed and interfered where you shouldn't have interfered when it comes to where my beds lie. And Shimon and Levi, you two were good brothers for Dina, but where was your brotherhood for Joseph? You were thieves. You attacked the city of Shechem, and I had nothing to do with it. Out of anger, you killed the whole city and became wealthy. Cursed is your anger. You will be scattered among Israel. Yehuda starts edging away. He sees the wrath of his father and his three brothers. He's scared. What's his father going to tell him? He says, no, you, everyone's going to thank you. The enemies will run away from you. Everyone will bow to you. You escaped the sin of destroying Yosef. You are like a lion. Who's going to arouse you? You will be the leader of Israel for all time. The nations will ultimately gather around your king. The Messiah will come from you. You will have so much wine, you could use it for laundering your clothing. Your eyes can be red from the wine. Your teeth can be white from so much milk you'll have in your portion in the land of Israel. Zevulun, you will partner up with Yisachar. Your descendants will fund the tribe of Yisachar because you will be merchants that live by the sea. And you will fund your brother Yisachar. Yisachar, you will have the skill. You will be dedicated to learning Torah like a trusted donkey that has strong bones, not too much fat. So too, you will have strength to focus on learning. You will know that you need a certain peace in order to learn Torah. You can't learn Torah without tranquility. And so you will take that responsibility of learning Torah. Learning Torah will give you responsibility. People will come to you for judgment. And when you make mistakes, you're going to pay for those mistakes. It's not always fun to be a leader in Torah. But that will be your task. Then you will ultimately have a judge, which will be the greatest judge of all time, probably the greatest learned judge of all time, otherwise known as Samson. And he will be like a snake. He will lead a one-man show against the Philistines. But woe, I fear, I dread his end. I pray to you, Hashem, save him in the end. God, you will lead battalions against the enemies. Asher, you will have great sustenance. Naphtali, you're like a young ram. Yosef, you are so flourishing. The girls danced on the walls to see you. And even though people repeatedly tried to embitter you and they wanted to knock you down with their arrows, but you were powerful. And you were so powerful that in the time that you were tested with Potiphar's wife, you were able to contain yourself as though your bow had been taut and you didn't let it go. You didn't let the arrow shoot, which is a modest way of saying you contained yourself from being with someone else's wife. You spread out your hands and you contained yourself. You had the strength from your father Yaakov, because Yosef saw his father's reflection in the mirror. And now, because of that, you will be the shepherd of Israel. Your father's strength should help you. You should have the blessings from above and below. Your father's blessings are better than my father's blessings. You, who have separated yourself from the brothers, you've been so pious, you should have all these blessings. Benjamin, you're like a wolf. A wolf is one who knows how to attack. You notice the tribe of Benjamin could take on all of Israel when there was civil war. These are the tribes of Israel. This is what their father blessed them. Each one got the blessing they needed. And then he commanded them, I will pass away. Bury me in that cave that I purchased in the field of Machpelah, the cave that my father purchased, my grandfather Avram. That's where Abraham was married with Sarah, Isaac with Rebekah, and that's where I buried Leah. So he gives them the deed to the land and he passes away. Yosef weeps over him. He has him mummified and then they take him up. Yosef tells Pharaoh, my father made me promise to take him up to bury him in Israel. Pharaoh says, fine, if you promise, then go. We'll have to discuss that. And Yosef has a huge crowd going with him. They go up, they bury him. And then Yosef's brothers are all scared. Now what's Yosef going to do to us now that Yaakov's dead? So they come and they make up a lie. And they tell him, you know, Dad left an edict before he passed away. He said, we should tell you, you should forgive us for what we've done to you. So please forgive us. And Yosef starts crying. And he says to them, what are you scared about? If 10 flames couldn't put out one flame, you think one flame could put out 10 flames? Obviously, Hashem intends for 12 tribes to be around. God had good plans when he sent me down here. Look at the wealth we have because you sent me down here. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of everyone. And Yosef raises his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And Yosef tells the Jewish people when he passes, I'm going to pass, but Hashem will take you out of here. Promise me you take my bones out of here. And Yosef dies at the ripe old age of 110 years old. And his body is buried in Egypt until he's taken out with the great Exodus. So all of this needs to be expanded on. That's an overview of the parsha. Now let's go through the parsha with more depth. Okay, so Yaakov sees that he's getting old. He lives in Egypt for 17 years. This is a reflection of Yosef's piety. Yosef was at home 17 years till he left. And so he received from his father finances for 17 years. So Yosef, who is a tzaddik, lives a complete life. He pays back his father the 17 years. He takes care of his father for 17 years, corresponding to the 17 years his father took care of him. Yaakov Avinu turns to heaven and says, Ribono Shel Olam, how could it be that a person approaches death and he has no warning? Please make it that there's a warning before a person dies. And Hashem says, great idea, you'll be first. And so Yaakov Avinu gets that gift of illness before he dies. Before Yaakov Avinu's time, Chazal tell us, a person used to sneeze and drop dead. That's why in every language, when a person sneezes, we tell him, bless you. Because it used to be common knowledge that when a person sneezed, he would drop dead. That's how his neshama came in. And then neshama came in through the nostrils, it would go out through the nostrils. Yaakov Avinu prays, Hashem, create a new thing. Let there be a warning. Let a person feel like his body's deteriorating before he dies. Let him have time to tell his family what he wants them to do. Hashem says, fine, great idea, you first. I'll give it to you first. And so Yaakov gets that blessing of illness prior to death, so he has time to warn his family, to give them a a warning, what he'd like them to do, his final blessing. And so when he sees he's going to pass away, he calls his son Yosef. He asks Yosef to take a vow. What's the value of a vow? So we know that when a person takes a vow, he's saying, by the honor of Hashem, I will keep my word. We know one of the Noahide laws is that a Noahide may not blaspheme. So when a Noahide takes a vow, he's saying, by the honor of Hashem, just like I can't blaspheme, I will keep my word. And Yosef promises he will take him up. He asks him to do chesed ve'emet. What is chesed ve'emet? There is a kindness which you assume you'll get repaid for. You go to dance at a friend's wedding, you assume when you'll get married, he'll dance at yours. You go to a friend's simcha and you give a gift, you assume when he'll come to yours, he'll give you a gift. In general, in life, we help other people, but there is an unspoken assumption, I'll help you, you'll help me. We know that. That's the way life works. When a person dies and we go to a funeral, when we go to help bury a person, Yaakov Avinu says, you know full well I won't be able to pay you back. And that's called chesed shel emet. That's why people would often vie for the rights to carry the ark to burial, because that's considered the greatest mitzvah. You know you're never getting anything back for it. So there used to be a rush between people who would get that mitzvah to carry the final steps to burial. That's a tremendous mitzvah. It's called chesed shel emet. People would vie for the right to be part of the Chevra Kadisha, to be a part of the preparation of a body for burial, because that's, again, a tremendous mitzvah that it's a mitzvah which no one's paying you back for. So that's called the Chevra Kadisha. That's a group of people who are responsible for purifying the body. When a person dies, we clean the body, we cut their nails, we prepare the body for burial, we immerse the body in a mikvah. So we wrap the body in a talis, in a prayer shawl. So that preparation, someone's got to do that. There's a group called Chevra Kadisha. So in a kittel, sometimes. I don't think we always do that. Sometimes we do it. Technically, a person should be buried in a kittel. Yes. The idea of being buried in a kittel is that it used to be that people would pay a lot of money to have beautiful clothing to be buried. And then it became a huge expense to bury a relative. And it reached a point where when someone would die, all his relatives would skip down, because they couldn't afford it. It was so expensive. It's like weddings today. People have to marry off their kids, so the aim thing is to pay a fortune, $250,000 on a wedding. Crazy. Yeah, what are you spending $250,000 for? Even $50,000, that's a tremendous amount of money. Buy them a house. You know. So people would skip town, and then Rabban Gamliel came along, and when it was his turn to be buried, when he was about to be deceased, he left a will, and he said, do me a favor, bury me in jeans. Bury me in the simplest clothing we have today. So that's the equivalent of today's jeans. I'm not talking about the jeans you pay $500 for. I'm talking about the simple, plain, when I was a kid, jeans that you bought for $2, right? So Rabban Gamliel asked that they bury him in the simplest clothing, which in their day was pishtan, flax. So he was the first one to wear a kittel like that of linen. And ever since then, it's become customary in Israel that we bury a person in a simple garment of white linen, because that was the cheapest garment in those times. It has no frills, just a simple robe made of one piece of cloth, made of linen. So we still use linen, even though today linen isn't the cheapest garment we have, but we often use linen. Generally, if it's possible, we bury a person in a linen kittel. Yeah. Some people actually get a kittel from the Chevra Kadisha to wear on Yom Kippur. Some people take it with them wherever they go. There was a custom of pious people that wherever they'd go, they'd carry their tachrichim. They would carry that kittel with them, so they'd always remember. Whenever I wear my kittel on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, I tell whoever I feel it's good to hear. You know, the little kids, it's not good to tell them this, but I'll say it if we have older guests over. I'll tell them, you see, this is what I'm getting buried in. You know, that's the idea. We're supposed to think that way. We want to enter Yom Kippur and think for a second, hey, wait a second. This is serious. This is for real. So back to our parsha. So Yaakov makes him promise he'll take him up to Eretz Yisrael.
there's a great merit to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Even if a person didn't live here, it says that the mere fact that he's buried here offers a certain atonement to him. What about living here? That's an even greater merit. It says, "Kol tato mechayim, kol tato lachar mita." The land connects with a person when he's alive, and the land connects with him after death. And you can't compare the connection you have to the land when you're dead to the connection when you're alive. So we had a student who left here, and unfortunately, he lost his way in life. And he ended up non-observant. And then and then he passed away. I don't know how he passed away. There were different stories. I don't know the facts. But what I do know is that he told his family he wants to be cremated and buried in Israel. So the problem is that in Judaism, we believe that cremation is a sin. A person is not allowed to cremate the body. We believe the body's coming back. There's going to be tchias amesim. And in cremation, a person's making a declaration that it's all over. There is no future. So if a person's cremated, we won't bury him in a Jewish burial ground. So we didn't know about this until he was cremated. We got word of it. The family called us up and said, we want to send the urn over. So technically, once a person's being cremated, we won't bury him in a Jewish graveyard. So even though he said he wants to be buried in Israel, he's buried in a non-Jewish burial yard in Israel, because a person wouldn't be buried in a Jewish graveyard if he's cremated. So yes, a person should live in Israel. And if they didn't have the good fortune of living in Israel, they should be buried in Israel. But a person shouldn't make that mistake and say, if I can't make it there, then at least I should be cremated and buried there. No, better be buried in Chutz Laaretz. He thought he'd save the money. He said, I'd be cremated, they chip my ashes. That's a big mistake. Don't do that. Sometimes. No. So if we would have known that it was against his will that he was cremated, then he could be buried in a Jewish burial. But all evidence indicated that he gave them the idea. So you can't say that was against his will. Right. So then there's no problem. Yes?
Is the sin of cremation, is that a word?
Yeah.
Is that on the person who passed away, or is that on the family member who doesn't?
Both. If he was a partner, so then both. So he makes him promise, and then Yaakov Avinu bows. So one understanding is he bows towards Yosef, because when a person's son is the king, you got to respect him. And the other understanding is he bows towards the Shekhinah. The Talmud tells us that when a person is ill, so the Shekhinah is right above his bed. Hashem is there supporting him. And that's why when we visit someone who's ill, so then our prayer carries more weight. Part of Bikur Cholim, as we visit the sick, we have to check what they need. If they need medication, if they need bandages, that's Bikur Cholim. You check out what they need. Today, in today's day and age of cell phones, so you call and you say, what can I bring you? I can go by a pharmacy on the way. You'd be surprised. It was Friday. We had just finished our learning here. It was one of those short Fridays towards the end of winter. And a neighbor of ours was in the hospital here in Shaarei Tzedek. I called home and I said to my wife, should I go visit him or I'll visit him next week? Because it's Friday, you know, Shabbos is coming. And my wife said, you have no guarantee he's going to be around next week. Go visit him today. So I said, okay. Why did I call first? Because she'd bite the bullet if I was going. It meant I could help less at home. So I said, okay, if she tells me to go, I'll go. So I called up the hospital and I asked his son, I said, what can I bring you? I'm on my way and pharmacies are about to close. Maybe you need something. So you think a guy's in the hospital, he doesn't need anything, right? Because the hospital has everything for him. So his son tells me, I don't need anything. Fine, I hang up the phone, I get on the train. A minute later, the phone rings. He calls me up and says, look, the doctors here say there's nothing they can offer him. But there's new research out there that a certain nutritional supplement with beta carotene can help his liver recover. And the doctors say they don't yet have it in the hospital, even though the hospital has recently backed this research. The hospital has recently found out that this research is worthwhile and they want to try it on him, but they don't have it to give him. So if you can pick it up at a pharmacy on the way, we'll have it. So That was the only thing they gave him. And he started improving. He passed away the following week. But he started improving. And it was the only medication he had that Shabbos, because the hospital said, we have nothing else to offer. Modern medicine has nothing to offer. And it taught me something, because I was hesitant. Should I call or shouldn't I call? But the halacha says, bikur cholim is, you check what does the guy need. It's not enough just to come sit down and sit next to him and smile and say, it's great to see you, you're a great guy. Bikur cholim means check what he needs. So I would have thought, in a hospital, he has what he needs, right? Not always. A previous time I visited him, I called him. That was when he was better. I asked him what I can bring him, and he told me that there were lozenges. He was getting chemo. His throat was all burned. And he said that the hospital did not give him, there were sprays and lozenges that would ease the pain on his throat. And for some reason, hospitals don't give that out. So I went to the pharmacy and I got it for him. So I'm just saying, this idea of bikur cholim, you call and check, what does the guy need? Or when you visit him, you check what he needs. So Yosef comes and sees what his father needs, and we have this concept that the Shekhinah is right there. When we visit a sick person, Hashem's presence is right over his bed. And after this, after Yosef has promised he'll take Yaakov up to the land of Canaan, by the way, this is another important concept. Yaakov takes care of what he'd like to happen. Very often we don't do that. Very often people pass away and their family members have no clue what they want. What does he want me to do with all his assets? What does he want me to do? Is there any charity he wanted me to support? What does he want me to do with all his clothing that he left behind? There are a lot of things people leave behind. I know someone who left behind the Sefer Torah, and the family had no idea what to do with the Sefer Torah. Today the Sefer Torah is wandering in certain yeshuvim, not getting any real good use. So Yaakov Avinu teaches us, and you'll see Moshe Rabbeinu does the same thing. Before he passes away, he takes care of his needs. He takes care of leaving a direction for the family. So Yosef gets word his father is ill, and as we mentioned, Yaakov Avinu prayed for illness. He asked that there should be a warning in life before a person passes, and he takes his two children with him, Menashe and Ephraim. Now, Menashe and Ephraim grew up in Egypt. They never saw Jewish people in their youth until the tribes came down. And so Menashe and Ephraim, their mother was who? Osnas. Who was Osnas? She was the illegitimate child. Remember, Dina was abducted by Shechem. Dina became pregnant. Yaakov Avinu was concerned that the brothers might express their zeal towards this new baby that came into the family, Dina's baby. Yaakov tells Dina, I can't leave the baby at home. After what Shimon and Levi did behind my back in Shechem, I have no way of knowing how they'll treat this baby who's the daughter of Shechem. So Yaakov Avinu takes her down to Egypt. He takes a trip down to Egypt, and he finds the best adoptive parents he could find. Who does he find? He finds a priest who's a eunuch called Potiphar, and eunuch means he was castrated by Pharaoh. He couldn't, so he wasn't a danger to the girl, right? And his wife, who happens to have been extraordinarily pious. Potiphar's wife was a very pious woman. The reason Potiphar's wife kept chasing after Yosef was because she repeatedly had visions that great leaders of the Jewish people were destined to come from her and Yosef. So she felt there's something spiritual, there's a spiritual drive for me to be with him. What she didn't understand was that it was her adopted daughter, Osnas, who would lead to the birth of the Messiah from Yosef. She thought it was supposed to be her. So she kept pursuing Yosef. But she had correct intentions, our sages say. She didn't mean to do it for bad reasons. She meant to do it for good reasons.
So,
that's a Midrash. Yeah. So now Yosef marries this girl who we would have thought she's probably the worst Jewess of the time, right? She's the daughter of Shechem. Doesn't get worse than that. Our sages say she was the best mother. We bless our children. Yekis bless their children every Friday night. Germanic Jews bless their children every Friday night with this blessing. Yesimcha Elokim ki Ephraim v'chim Menashe. God should place you like Ephraim and Menashe. Who brought up Ephraim and Menashe? Yosef was running the country. Who was it? It was Osnat, the woman behind the scenes who we never meet, but we see the products of her labors. We see Ephraim and Menashe are the two children who grew up in Chutzlartz. They grew up in Egyptian culture, in Pharaoh's palace. All around them they see women sleeping with women, men sleeping with men, men exchanging wives. All the illicit activity that you could imagine was going on commonplay in Egypt. When the Talmud, when the Torah says, "Kimasei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo ta'asu," don't behave like you've seen the Egyptians behave. So the Talmud says that's the biblical prohibition of women sleeping with women. intimately. Yeah, that's where's that prohibited? There in that pasuk. Don't be like the Egyptians. So Manasseh and Ephraim are growing up in Pharaoh's palace where they see all of this. They're growing up with everything going on around them, and we bless our children every Friday night. May Hashem place you like Ephraim and Manasseh. They are the chosen leaders of the Jewish people. We don't say you should be like Yehuda, you should be like Reuven, you should be like Moshe Rabbeinu, Ephraim and Manasseh. So Ephraim and Manasseh are exceptional children. Their mother is an exceptional woman. Yes? Okay, it's a nice thought. I hear. I don't know. What?
The idea of making a will, and when discussing the Talmud, does it say parameters of witnesses or other such? That has to be there's a Jewish procedure that's not.
There's a whole system, yeah. Could be followed, should be followed. We have halachos of how to write a will.
If you go to a lawyer.
Got to go to a Jewish lawyer. Go to a Jewish lawyer who knows how to write up a Jewish will.
It's a legal action.
Yeah. One of the reasons that Yaakov strengthens himself is because Yaakov wants to show his children that he still has the capacity to give gift. Halachically, you have to have a certain health in order to give gifts. So Yosef gets word that his father's ill. His son has been learning by his father, Yaakov. Ephraim would constantly learn by Yaakov. It says that a person should try to have his children educated by his parents. If you have parents or in-laws who are learned, there's an added advantage to having the child learn from a generation earlier. If you're offered a shidduch, you should know there is an added value to a girl whose father is a ben Torah. Because your children are getting one generation closer to Sinai. So Yosef has his son learning by his father, Yaakov. If the father is not learned, if the father is not observant, obviously you don't need the child learning there. But if one has that advantage, then it's a benefit. So Yaakov comes in. Yosef comes into Yaakov. Yaakov sits up on the bed. And he tells Yosef, Hashem appeared to me and blessed me and told me that he's giving me the land of Israel. I want to give your two children, Ephraim and Manasseh, the rights to be like two tribes. Machlokas Rashi Ramban, whether they would be two tribes so that they would inherit double. That's the Ramban's opinion. Rashi is of the opinion that there were only two tribes in name, but they didn't get a double inheritance. In the land of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh actually have a very large portion. The question is it proportionate to their size? Or was it because they actually got a double portion as two tribes? He says, every other child that you have will have to fit in, will blend in with them. Notice that every time we want to say someone of importance in Judaism, we call him Ephrati. The term Ephraim means man of importance. All of the people of Israel are called Ephraim. Ephraim becomes the generic name for the Jewish people. Sometimes we call them Yehudim, right? That's when we're in exile, when we're in the land of Israel. So the people of Israel are called Ephraim. It's not what you'd expect. No, Manasseh was. Ephraim was in Israel. Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh were in exile.
I mean,
yeah.
In their greatness, which is in Egypt.
Okay.
The reason we respect them, you know?
Okay, okay.
Habenya Kirli Ephraim, is that one of the
tribes? Yeah, Habenya Kirli
Ephraim,
yes.
We hold our Rashi nowadays, right?
Like today it's not relevant. It's not yet relevant. We don't call the people of Israel Ephraim, except for in biblical terms, Aben Yakir Li Ephraim. Yaakov tells Yosef, here I am asking you to take me up to the land of Israel. And you must be wondering, how come I never took your mother, Rachel, for proper burial? Well, let me tell you what happened. I just entered the land of Israel. Esav was still in control around here. He hadn't yet left. By the time Leah died, Esav had left to Mount Seir, and I had given him all the wealth I had for my rights to the land of Israel. Remember, those were rights that we knew would take decades or centuries to come to fruition because the Canaanites were still there. But at that time, I had just come into the land of Israel. I didn't yet have a legal right to the land. And she died, and I had all the children with me. She died at childbirth, and it would be disrespectful for her to start carrying her body all the way to the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And I had a prophetic vision that it was good for the Jewish people to have her buried there, so that when they'd be exiled, they'd pass by her and she would weep on their behalf, and her prayer would be accepted. So all these are excellent excuses that Yaakov is telling Yosef. Our sages say that Yaakov had to explain himself, because in fact there was a different reason why Yaakov couldn't bring Rachel to burial. In fact, Yaakov was embarrassed, because if he would have to lie next to his father and grandfather with two sisters, which everyone knew is biblically prohibited, so even though there were technical reasons why for him it was permissible, but he was embarrassed. So he saw no way to bury her in Ma'aras HaMachpelah. What would he do? Bury her and then tell Leah, we'll find another place for you when you die? She was dead already. What was he supposed to do? So he's not going to tell Yosef that reason. He tells Yosef three other reasons, which are all true. But there was a fourth reason which he's not mentioning. And that fourth reason was also relevant. So he tells him, look, she died at childbirth. If we would have moved her around, her whole body was oozing blood. It was disrespectful to the body. We had to bury her right away. He tells him, I had a bunch of kids with me. I just entered the land of Israel. I couldn't travel with everyone. He says, I had a prophetic vision. He says, I didn't buy it off of Esav yet. He gives him excellent reasons. But there's another reason he omits. And that's the reason that was pounding in his heart. So that's why he has to give this explanation. And Yaakov turns to the children. He can't see well. He asks, who are they? Yosef says, they are the children that God gave me with this. Throughout his life, Yaakov is always wondering, what's Yosef been up to all these years he's been gone? Two opinions among our sages. Whether Yaakov knew with prophetic vision everything that happened. That was the first interpretation I gave to the whole story, that Yaakov knew everything. Another interpretation says that throughout Yosef's life, he kept the distance from his father. The final 17 years, he never allowed the two of them to be alone in a room, so that his father would never ask him, son, what happened? Where were you? So that was a double-edged sword. Because on the one hand, Yaakov knew he had a powerful son, and when he needed him, he calls him. But on the other hand, Yaakov always wondered, I know he's prince of Egypt. How many women was he with before he got to that position? And that's why Yaakov never kisses Yosef. Yaakov is always wondering, where is he holding in his life? Yaakov senses something's off. Yaakov's right. Our sages say Yosef could have become 12 tribes. But when Potiphar's wife approached Yosef that day, our sages say Yosef entered the house with the intent to commit adultery with her. He walks into the house and she grabs his cloak. And he's as interested as she is. But he looks up and he sees his father in the window. Yikes! So he holds himself back, right? Our sages say, Vatashav Beitan Kashto, in Yaakov's blessing, he says, his bow was drawn, and he held it back. Our sages say, Vayafozus Reyadav, what does it mean? He extended his fingers. Our sages say he extended his 10 fingers, and 10 drops of semen came out of each, one out of each finger. And it says that as he was standing there, holding himself back from Potiphar's wife, so his father, he heard a voice telling him, every other tribe is going to be engraved on the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. Yosef, are you going to be out? And with that, Yosef ran away. But he lost 10 drops. Our sages say for those 10 drops, he lost 10 tribes. So he became 2 tribes, 2 out of the 12. But he didn't become 12. You see, Benjamin became 10 tribes, but Yosef only became 2. So when Yaakov... Benjamin became 10 families, which corresponded to the 10 tribes and were powerful enough to take on the 10 tribes. You're right. Technically, Benjamin did not have the property of the 10 tribes, and Benjamin did not have the rights of the 10 tribes, but Benjamin had the power of the 10 tribes. When there was civil war, Benjamin won the first 2 battles against all the other tribes. So Benjamin had the power of 10 tribes.
But my question is, Yosef, it says like, you lead, the 2 were considered 2 tribes.
Correct.
So if he would have had 10 more children, would they be considered each one of them a tribe?
That's a good question, how it should have played itself out. Because that question also lends itself to the other question. The brothers were concerned that Yosef was going to bump them out of being the inheritors of Avram and Yitzchak.
Right.
And according to this Medrash, there was a kernel of truth in that. There was a potential for Yosef to be all 12. You see, when Reuven sins, so who tells Yaakov that Reuven sinned? Yosef. Yosef walks in and tells his father. And what happens? So Reuven loses his right to the throne, and he loses his right to the Bechorah. Who gets it? Yosef. So Rachel's first son gets the rights to the Bechorah. Yosef does bump off Reuven. So Yaakov asks that he bring the children close and he'll bless them. So he kisses them, he hugs them, and he tells Yosef, you know, I never even prayed that I would see you again because I thought you were dead. It was something I didn't even pray about. And now look, Hashem gave me something I didn't even pray about. I see you and your children. And then Yaakov crosses his hands. That maybe we'll discuss Thursday night, what's going on there. And he blesses Yosef's children. And he tells Yosef, you're going to have the city of Shechem, which I won from the Amori with my sword and my bow. So we learned the Medrash about the wars that ensued after Shimon and Levi conquered Shechem. That after Yaakov, initially it says everyone was quiet, and then later on the nations came down to attack Yaakov, and Yaakov summoned his children, and they stood up, and Yaakov was able to protect the family from the enemies with his sword and bow. So that's a simple reading of the pasuk. Our sages say it means with my prayer. His prayer was what saved them. So Yaakov says, Shechem is mine, not Shimon and Levi's. He calls his children, and he says, let me tell you what's going to be at the end of time. And they all gather. And he can't. He loses it. So he says, wait a second, my children, in the letters of their name, there isn't the letter chet or tet. There's no chet in my children. So how come I can't tell them when the Messiah, the final redemption, is going to come? So Hashem tells him, there's no kuf or tzadi in any of their names either. There's no kates. They don't have the merit to hear the kates. So Yaakov looks at his children and says, do you all believe? So they all declare Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And that's the first time Shema Yisrael is declared. And Yaakov responds, what does Yaakov say? What does Yaakov say? One version has it that Yaakov says, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. He says that as a response to them. So because Yaakov says it, we say it. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write it in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write the Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso, right? So we say it quietly. We make a compromise. We do say it, but we don't say it out loud. In the Targum Yonah or Targum Yerushalmi, it says that Yaakov responded with Yehi Shmei Rabam Varach Leolam Lo Meomaya. So that's why some want to say there's a correspondence between Yehi Shmei Rabah and Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso. Think about that. So he calls them in, and suddenly he can't remember. He can't figure out when the final redemption is going to come. Seems like we weren't supposed to know it. Imagine if 3,000 years ago, the Jews would have known that it would take another 3,000 years for the Messiah to come. How could they have handled it? The Jews would go out into exile and known that there'd be another 2,000 years. How could you handle that? The idea that it might happen tomorrow gave us strength. So this was supposed to be hidden. Yaakov Avinu is going to bless the children. He begins and he tells Reuven, you were my strength. Reshit Oni, my first seed. Sages say Yaakov Avinu never spilt his seed. So sometimes people get very upset if they can't live up to Yaakov Avinu. So first of all, Yaakov Avinu was the exception. Normal people, every so often, it happens to them. We know there's a prohibition for a person to cause it to happen to himself. But if it happens to a person every so often, that's normal. Yaakov Avinu was the exception. He tells Reuven, you're so powerful, but you acted too quickly. You got involved in something that was not your business. So we have to know two things. Number one is that very often when we act out of haste, that's when we make the biggest mistakes. There's a saying in Hebrew that haste comes from Satan. People get into accidents when they drive too quickly. People make the biggest mistakes in life when they act too quickly. And the second thing is when people try to protect someone's honor, in the name of someone's honor, sometimes people can do things that they regret the rest of their lives. Reuven pays a tremendous price for this. He gets involved in the name of his mother's honor. He gets involved where he shouldn't have gotten involved. Yes. So in heaven,
he made a mistake based on emotion. He said, you know, he saved Yosef. Shouldn't he forgive him in the end? Even in the blessing, he doesn't give him anything. In the end, he doesn't give him anything.
So I'll tell you, I don't like saying things that I don't have a source for. If you want, I'll tell you a thought I had on this matter. But I don't have proof that this is correct. This is my own thought. The pasuk can be read as very harsh. Doesn't sound like a blessing, right? When we read such a thing, we feel like this isn't a blessing. But first of all, he does call him Bechoriata Kochi Vereshit Oni, Yeter Set Vyeteraz. But sometimes the greatest gift we can give a person is to show them their weakness so that they can continue to grow. We don't like hearing rebuke, but sometimes that's the greatest gift you can give a person. Sometimes I could tell you about myself that there were positions where there were places where I taught that I would try every few months or every half a year to sit with the Rosh Yeshiva or the whoever was in charge and ask them, what should I be doing different? I need to learn. We always need to learn. And the best way to learn is if someone tells us what we're doing wrong. When we're very personal about it, so then rebuke is a smack in the face. But when we're willing to observe things in a positive way, so then it's the greatest gift a person can give us. It's not pleasant, but what is a blessing? A blessing is giving potential for future growth. You're wishing a person future growth. Sometimes the only way a person can grow is if you show them their mistakes. When Yaakov tells Shimon and Levi, you will be scattered, cursed is your anger. So Levi takes that anger, he takes that zeal and channels it. And he becomes the Kohen, who are Zrizim, Kohanim are zealous in the name of Hashem. And when everyone goes after the Egyptian edict, come, work in honor of Pharaoh. Levi says, no, I'm going for Hashem. They take that zeal and they channel it. Everyone goes after the Egel, and Levi says, nope, I don't go that route. So they take that zeal and channel it. So then Yaakov's decree, you will be scattered among Israel, becomes a decree that's a blessing. They're the teachers of Israel, and they're scattered among Israel to educate the people of Israel. Shimon takes that same zeal and he does not channel it correctly. And so then Shimon leads us to the downfall all the way to the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, where Shimon are the ones that go headstrong after the women and the pagan god of Peor. Nesive Tavla Shimoni, yeah? So I'm saying the fact that Yaakov is rebuking them is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes it's the greatest gift you can give a person. If a person knows it comes from love, it says, Tova tochachat megula me'ahava mesutaret. Revealed rebuke that stems from hidden love is very good. If you really know someone loves you, if you really know they want what's good for you, and then they'll hopefully present it in the best possible way. Okay, so notice how Yaakov does not curse Shimon and Levi. He curses their anger. Yeah, it's a big difference. Sometimes when we speak to children, it's very easy to tell a child, you are this, you are that. It's much better to speak about the trait, not the child. Yehuda is told that he will lead the Jewish people, and that's why you notice that Shaul didn't last. Shaul died at war, and the Hasmonean kingdom didn't last because it was decreed in our parsha that the kings would have to come from Yehuda. Notice it says, Leven Shinaim Mechalav. Our sages say the literal meaning of the pasuk is they'll have so much milk, their teeth will be white. But there's another interpretation to the pasuk. Leven Shinaim, showing the person the white of your teeth, is Mechalav, is more precious than giving them milk. There are a lot of people that might give the person a cup of milk. There aren't a lot of people that'll smile and show them the white of their teeth. And our sages said that making a person feel good, showing the white of the teeth, is more than giving the person food and drink. Notice when a person comes around collecting, how many people give him a coin, and how many people smile and treat him nicely. That's halacha in the laws of tzedakah. Whenever possible, a person should try and give the tzedakah with a warm countenance. As the Maharal writes in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, man spends most of his life yearning for people to treat him well. We yearn for that much more than we yearn for financial satisfaction. We yearn for recognition. Leven Shinaim Mechalav. Zvulun is blessed before Yisachar. This is the idea that Talmud also tells us, that he who funds Torah gets a front row seat. When they're partners, every person has to learn Torah. Zvulun also learns Torah. But Zvulun gets blessed before Yisachar. Yisachar says you need, Yaakov and his blessing says you need a certain calmness in order to learn Torah. You will notice any other learning you can do on less sleep. You want to succeed in Torah, you need more sleep. Torah takes more out of you. A person needs more physical tranquility in order to learn Torah. You're investing your soul. In other areas, your soul can be all over because you're investing your body. There's much less of the soul involved. That's why Yisachar, who's described as learning Torah, is Vayar Menucha Kitov. He says, I know I need to rest. You need more sleep when you're learning Torah. If you're really diligent about learning Torah, you need more sleep. I heard an interesting class with Rav Herschel Schachter. He was interviewed by a bunch of guys in first year or second year yeshiva. So one of the guys asked him, what do you do when you have a bad day? When you wake up and you have a bad day in yeshiva. So Rav Schachter, now if you guys don't know him, he's very down to earth, but he's also very learned. His answer, he began with something that threw me off. He said, a bad day? I try not to have a bad day. Then he said, what do you mean a bad day? A bad day is usually that I wake up and I didn't sleep enough that night. So then I try to get the sleep I need to be able to learn more. So I thought about that. Most of the time, when we have a bad day, it's because we didn't sleep well. Yeah, sometimes there are external things that bother us. But most of the time, it's because we don't have that emotional stamina to be able to focus on what we're doing now. They say today, a lot of research proves that the reason we don't have good memories is because we're not focused. If we would focus on what we were doing, we would remember what we were doing. But if while we're sitting here, we're thinking about the email I didn't answer yet, the chavrusa who I'm hoping to still see when I get out of here, I'm wondering if I'm still going to have any coffee or tea left upstairs. There are a bunch of little thoughts that are bugging us as we're sitting here. We're not fully focused, so we don't remember. If we would be fully focused, we would remember. We once had a student here he was the madrich, and he remembered everything. We would talk at night, and we'd give him a list of things to do. He remembered everything. And I once commented to him and I said, you remember everything because you have nothing else in your life. The only thing you have is the Torah you're learning and the Mahon responsibilities as a madrich. It's wonderful, but you will see when life will give you more responsibilities, you won't be able to remember without writing it down. He'd always ask me why I'm writing things down. Anytime we'd say we'd meet on a day or something, I'd write it down. And I'd say, because I can't remember like you. And he'd say, why? I'd say, because I have more things I got to deal with. You're lucky. You're at a stage in life where all you have to do is learn Torah and be the madrich at the machon. And then life had it that he got more responsibilities. And one day I see him with a notepad writing things down. Yeah, okay, that's what happens. So Yisachar, who is blessed with Torah, says, I need sleep. I need to rest. You want to succeed in Torah, you need to have a rest. Even the Rambam, who worked so hard He describes that at some point he would lie down and take in patience. He was so tired, he said he would come back from the Sultan, treating the Sultan. He'd come back home, he'd have a long line of people waiting for him. So he'd lie down because he didn't have the strength to sit or stand and talk to them. And patients would come in as he was lying down. He'd diagnose each one. So that even the Rambam writes, when he starts the Gera Teiman, his Yemenite epistle, he says, I'm not as great as my forefathers because life has thrown me all over the continent and I haven't had the peace of mind to grow in learning Torah. So as great as he was, he felt he should have gotten more. And had he had the proper rest, he would have gotten more. We discussed Samson. We'll quickly rush forward to get to other parts of the parasha. Yeah. We discussed Shimshon, that he did guerrilla warfare, one-man show, just like snakes don't go in packs. Sometimes, so too Shimshon went alone. Shimshon. The blessing of Dan is understood about Shimshon. By the way, the pasuk Lishuatcha Kiviti Hashem. So the Kabbalists say that within that pasuk is the angel that protects a person en route. So that's why we say that as part of Tfilat HaDerech. Many people add that Lishuatcha Kiviti Hashem, Hashem Lishuatcha Kiviti. You say it forward and backwards. That's supposed to be the angel that protects a person. It says that even Samson, when he knocked down the walls. When he knocked down the pillars and brought down the house the Philistines were all on, he said it with the verse, Lishuatcha Kiviti Hashem. If you understand the Kabbalistic intonations of the Pasuk, then you know how to access the forces that are within that Pasuk. Okay, so Yaakov passes away and he tells them, bury me there. So they take him up and first, they're going to mummify him, and they're going to mourn him for 7 days. So that's against halacha. We never mourn a person before burial. In halacha, you only mourn a person after they're buried. So technically, Yosef did it because he knew his father had 7 days of happiness at a wedding. 7 days Sheva Brachos corresponding to that. We have 7 days of mourning when a person passes. But that's an institution of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not a biblical obligation to mourn for 7 days. Only the day of a person's passing is biblical. So Yosef has to go bury his father in Israel. Pharaoh says, no way. Yosef says, but I promised. Yosef says, Pharaoh says, so what if you promised? Yosef says, gee, you remember the first day we met, I promised you I wouldn't tell anyone that I know more languages than you. Pharaoh says, you got to keep a promise. Of course you got to go bury your father in Canaan. And so that's why Yaakov made him promise, because he knew that in politics, sometimes making a promise will force him, will give him the leverage to go up. Now, when he goes up, Pharaoh suddenly says, leave the kids behind. And that's why when Yaakov passes, the servitude begins. Even though they're not working, but suddenly they realize they're not free to leave. It's at that time that Pharaoh says, I'm not giving passports to the whole family. You can go up with the men, you could take up Yaakov, you can't take the kids up there. And the Jews suddenly realize they're stuck in Egypt. And that's why the parasha begins. There's no gap between this parasha and last week's parasha, because the Jews suddenly realize Egypt is closing in on them. They're no longer free to leave when they want. So they start ascending to bring him to be buried in Israel. Pharaoh and Yosef send along a huge army as they go up. And in fact, that army has to be there because Esav has prepared a huge army. And we learned in our class in Jewish history, as is recorded in Josephus, there were tremendous battles on their way up to Canaan. Meaning Esav wasn't going to let this fly. There were tremendous battles with Esav's grandson, and ultimately they captured him, Tzfo, and they brought him back into prison in Egypt. And then we have a tradition that when they came up to Maaret HaMachpelah, Esav showed up with his troops and said, what do you guys want to bury him here for? It's mine. There were two burial plots left. He buried Leah, so he took his. Now the other one is mine. We're twin brothers. I get one, he gets one. He used up his. So the brothers say, no, you sold yours. Yaakov paid you for it. Esav says, where's the deed? So now they're in front of all the Egyptians, and many kings have come along out of respect for Yaakov. What are they going to do? They're going to say, we have it back in Egypt. They said, okay, we're sending Naphtali back. Naphtali is very quick. So Naphtali starts running back. Now remember, Dan had a son who was deaf, Hushim. Hushim was deaf. So he sees there's this whole commotion going on, and he says, what's going on? He signals someone. So they signal him. You see that big man on a horse? He's not letting us bury your grandfather Yaakov. So Chushim says, him? That's the problem? He grabs a shovel and knocks off Esav's head. And with that, Esav dies. And that's what Rebecca had said. She had foreseen. She said, I don't want to bury you both in one day. And she told Yaakov, I want you to leave. I don't want to bury you both in one day. They did both get buried in one day. Esav's head rolls onto Yaakov's, onto Yaakov. We have a tradition that Esav's head first rolled onto Yaakov's stomach. Yaakov opened his eyes, smiled, and then closed his eyes again. And then Esav's head rolled into Maaros HaMachpelah. Our tradition is that Esav's head did get buried in Maaros HaMachpelah. The rest of his body got buried elsewhere, but his head got buried in Maaros HaMachpelah. So when the tribes took Yaakov's body out of Egypt, Yaakov told them exactly how to stand around his bed. Only they should carry him, because their children were already from Canaanite women. So he said, only you who came from Jewish women, from my wives, should carry my bed. We have a tradition that when it comes to carrying the deceased, the holier the people who carry the bed, the better it is for the deceased. Great rabbis would only let people who had immersed that day in a mikveh carry their body. So the tribes carry him the same way they're going to travel in the desert, which corresponds to the constellations, which corresponds to the different strengths that each tribe had. Each tribe within Israel represents different strengths. That's why each tribe has a different territory in the land of Israel, and each tribe has a different flag, and each tribe has a different color on the breastplate. Each tribe has different strengths, and it's supposed to be that way. That's why each tribe has a different nusach of tefillah. There are 12 nuschot of tefillah. Today we don't have all of them, but there are supposed to be different nuschot, because each one has a different channel of connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have different venues of Avodas Hashem. They're on their way back, and Yosef throws himself at the pit where the brothers threw him in. They're walking by the pit, and Yosef walks over to that pit where they threw him in, and he makes a blessing. Blessed are you, Hashem, who made me a miracle in this place. And the brothers see him going over to that pit and whispering. They get nervous. They say to one another, what's he saying? So they come over to him and they lie. And from here we learn that for the sake of peace, you're also allowed to lie. And they tell him, your father, before he died, he said, we should tell you, you should make peace with us. And Yosef says, what are you so scared about? I would never do you any harm. He never says he's mochel them. And because Yosef never says he's mochel them, he never says he forgives them, for eternity we're still paying the price. Part of the procession of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is to attain atonement for the sin of selling Yosef. We have the goat's blood that corresponds to the blood of Yosef, of what was done to Yosef. So Yosef, before he passes, leaves them a code. He says, "Pakod yifkod Elokim etchem," God will redeem you. He uses two terms. He uses a double language and the letter pay. We have a tradition that every letter that's doubled in Hebrew, right? We have a pay and an end pay. We have a tzadi and an end tzadi, right? We have a mem and an end mem. We have a nun and an end nun. Everyone corresponds to a different exile and redemption from that exile. So the exile in Egypt was the double pay. And that's why when Moshe is going to come in next week's parsha, the Jews are going to listen for that code. Does he know to say, like Yosef said, Pakod Yifkod, Hashem will still remember you and take you out of Egypt? No one knows the code other than a few select people, the leaders of the Jewish people. But Yosef leaves them with a code. When the time comes to leave here, you will see. The Redeemer will come and say, redeem, God has come to redeem you. That's the code he's going to use. And Yosef passes away with a message, take me out of here too. We're all leaving. We're all leaving. And that's the end of the book of Bereishis. We end Bereishis in Egypt. With a vision, we got to get out of here, which leads us into the book of Shmos.